Have you ever wanted to fly through the sky? Have you ever wanted to fight crime? Have you ever wanted to punch evil right in its stupid face? Well, then I have the perfect comic for you. Jupiter Jet Volume 1 from Action Lab Entertainment hits comic book stores on May 30th, and it's written by your Mind University professors, Jason Inman, me, and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It collects all five issues of our first comic book miniseries. The website IGN gave the story of Jackie Johnson a 7.9 out of 10. So watch as she inherits a jetpack with a mysterious power source, and together with her brother Chuck and their cat, she must protect her home from a threat that may or may not be from this earth. The trade collection of our comic book series also includes a cover by John Boy Myers of Teen Titans and Royals. Please pre-order Jupiter Jet Volume 1 at your local comic book store, Amazon.com, or Barnes & Noble. We have more stories to tell at Jupiter Jet, and pre-orders really make a big difference in whether we'll be able to tell more stories in this world. And we think you'll enjoy this trade. Thanks for listening, and now on to the show. If you said to yourself after Avengers Infinity War that you need more Avengers in your life, then this podcast is for you as we decide the top five Avengers stories. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Avenging Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or team from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour, except this week when we do something different. So if this is your first episode, enjoy!
Enjoy your first list. That's what I would say. So there's this little movie out there called Avengers.
Really cool Infinity independent War. Film.
Yeah, it's not doing that well at the box office, though. So we thought we'd promote it a little bit.
Yeah.
And we decided that a lot of people like this movie, and maybe they're walking out of this movie, and maybe they're like, hey, I want to read some more about this team called the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode is for them. And we decided that we could not talk about the Avengers all by ourselves. We brought in a guest.
Ooh.
You know him from YouTube as Comic Pop. I don't know why I'm laughing during this, because his shows are amazing.
Because he's a hilarious individual.
And the Elseworlds Exchange podcast. Please welcome, I'm going to call him Mr. Sal.
Why not? Hi, everybody.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast, man.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it. I love this show.
Oh, thank you, man.
Go on, Sal.
Now, we've done, I've appeared on your shows many times. We talked about comic books a lot of times.
I have also appeared on Sal's shows. Thank you very much.
Listen, Ashley, it's not all about you.
It is.
It's all about Sal.
It is always about me.
So I'm really glad that we could bring you over and have comic book talks over here, because you were kind of our first choice when we talked about who's the person that we should talk Avengers with.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very flattered.
All right. So I think we should just drop straight into these lists. Now, everybody out there listening, this is not the objective list. This is just kind of each of the pundits' personal favorites. So if you get bothered by us not having a certain story on the list, then just get over it.
Well, and then, you know, you can head on over to our social media. We'd love to see what everyone's list looks like as well.
That's probably the better choice. All right, yeah. Ashley, why don't you start us off with number five? What do you think is the fifth greatest Avengers story?
My fifth greatest Avengers story is a little something called Avengers Arena. This series shows 16 young heroes from the Marvel Universe and pits them against each other in a kill or be killed reality show-like scenario on Murder World, run by Arcade, because Hunger Games was really popular at the time. So I picked this story because this is a better, darker version that accomplishes the same thing that the original Secret War does, where it's basically, again, Hunger Games for all of the fan favorite characters in the Marvel Universe. In the comics, it follows directly after a story called Avengers Academy, but I would use this Hunger Games-esque story to explain where all the characters who blipped away at the end of Infinity War went. So they've spent all this time fighting each other and forging alliances that will determine team dynamics when they return to the 616 reality and reestablish their teams in whatever a post-Avengers 4 world is going to look like.
Oh, so you're Are you pitching Avenger 4 movies?
No, I'm pitching like Avengers like 3.5, like where right. all the, you know, where all the fan favorite characters who were introduced in Phase 2 went, while Cap and Iron Man decide to kiss and make up, which is what's going to happen in Avengers 4.
All right, so why does this make your top 5? Like why do you think this list is number, why is
so
this story number 5?
So this makes my top 5 from I really tried to pick stories that I thought would make compelling movies, even if it wasn't a straight up adaptation, because I think that the Marvel Cinematic Universe does a really great job at taking the core of what a story is and adapting it to serve their larger narrative. Like we saw Demon in a Bottle done in microcosm over the course of the first two Iron Man stories, even though one of them wasn't called Iron Man, Demon in a Bottle. And I think the idea of Murder World is really, really interesting. And I think, again, you could use it as a building block and as an explanation point to give us something more than just, oh, these characters are gone and now they're back. And I also think that taking the Salvivic sacrifice, Hunger Games model plays on a trope that people really like right now, and it appeals to an audience that maybe is into geek stuff but isn't into comic book stuff. Now, I know the Avengers movies transcend more than others, but I think anything that opens up your arena a little bit more. Plus, I just really like this story. It was one of the first.
That's what I want to talk
about. It was one of the first. Well, I'm telling you, I didn't just pick stories that, you know, I thought a little bit more in a meta-narrative perspective than just about what I liked or what I didn't like.
Oh, okay.
Like, all of my choices, I think, would serve the narrative that the MCU is driving forward right now.
I actually think, Sal, I hate to tell you, I think we might have already lost this podcast because Ashley's choices might be just so much smarter than ours.
I hear you, man. No, that's... That, I was just like, well, these are just things that I enjoyed reading.
That's what
like,
I went with, too.
Well, one of mine, I know for sure Jason's going to be like, this can't be on your list, so we'll see how that goes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I feel very strong about it, which is why I put
it on my
list.
Well, as long as you don't say Squadron Supreme, I'll be okay.
I've never read that. but this jumped to my mind because Avengers Arena is one of the first Avengers books that I picked up of my own volition. Most of my Avengers reading post that was people handing me stuff and saying, you have to read this.
Now, let me ask you this, Ashley, because I've only read like the first couple issues of Avengers Arena. If I only know the Avengers movie characters, could I pick up Avengers Arena, or will I be completely lost?
No, if you want to pick up the book, you do need to know a little bit about what is going on in the Marvel Now 2013-2014 continuity. Because like I said, it spins directly out of Avengers Academy. Mm-hmm. So if you do want to read this, I would recommend going back and picking up Avengers Academy. But this is the better story because Avengers Academy is a lot like what you get in the X-Men stories where it's teen drama meets superheroes. But it's set against an Avengers backdrop this time. It's got Nico and Chase immediately post Runaways. It's got a couple X-Men characters in it. Armor is in it. Shout out to Armor, whose name I always forget. And I go, who's that Armor character girl again? And then Jason goes, her name is just Armor. I would also caution people with younger readers that a lot of people die in this. So if you have sensitive readers, just proceed with caution.
All right. I think it's an interesting choice.
Thank you.
Sal, what is your number 5?
I feel bad following that up because I really like that Avengers Arena idea.
Did it make your list? Am I spoiling anything?
It did not. No,
okay.
Not at all.
I was pretty sure this was not making anybody's list but mine.
No. Yeah, it's not on
but
my
I
list
really
either.
Dig the fact that you picked that because I don't think that Avengers Academy / Arena gets nearly enough love. I loved the initiative idea and Avengers Academy
in
general.
I do too.
I thought the concept was better than the execution, but I was rooting for it. And when it died, I was like, no. And then they turned it into Arena and I was like, this is kind of cool. But yeah, my number 5 is actually very different. For this one, I guess I gotta go with Avengers Along Came a Spider. It's only technically called Along Came a Spider because Spider-Man is in it, and I am a personal Spider-Man fan. It is smack dab in the middle of like one of the worst times in Avengers history, and I don't mean the darkest day, I mean like some of the most boring stories in Avengers history. And this one is, man, okay. So it's written by John Byrne and Fabio Nicieza. It's drawn by Paul Ryan and Tom Palmer. And it's basically just a straight up Avenger story. Nebula is looking to get absolute power. So she sneaks onto the Strangers kind of world ship and steals this triforce of machinery called the Infinity Unity or Union. And it's just a MacGuffin that grants absolute power. And the Avengers have to stop her. And Spider-Man gets roped into it. And so he has to, like, learn how to become an Avenger. And it's during this weird period where Captain America is feeling a crisis of faith with the Avengers. And so as a result, he's trying to pick kind of new members or trying to revamp the team unofficially and kind of secretly in his own personality. So he's kind of like, okay, so Spider-Man, you're kind of cool and you've been around for a while and it's 1990 and you're incredibly popular. Would you like to be an Avenger? And he's like, nah, I don't really join usually. And that's every time Spider-Man's ever teamed up with the Avengers, they always go, why aren't you an Avenger? And he's like, because I'm a loner. And then they go, fair enough. And then he leaves. But this one, from issue 314 to 318, he is an Avenger. They're like, you're an Avenger. You get a room at the mansion. Meet Vision. You're part of the team now. And your first adventure is going into space and fighting the Stranger, who Spider-Man actually did face in like an old terrible Marvel team-up story in like the 70s or whatever. And it is a mess. It's so silly and so ridiculous and so high-flying classic. I put classic in quotes, but Avenger story, where it's a quintessential Avengers tale where they deal with cosmic threats and Spider-Man is kind of our gateway character. If you've never read an Avenger story, he's your guy to go with because you're probably reading Spider-Man and so you're seeing it through his eyes. And and at the end of the story, Captain America fires him. It's really rough.
Can I ask you a question? Is this one, am I remembering this right? Is this a West Coast Avengers story or Avengers West Coast?
I believe I want to say that it's actually from the Avengers proper, like, okay, adjective lists, no West Coast. And I think they're planning on getting rid of the West Coast Avengers at this point, or at least they're not paying that much attention to them. But yeah, it's straight up Avengers, like Vision, Captain America, Hawkeye, even though Hawkeye, I think, ran the West Coast Avengers at that point. Yeah, it was ridiculous. But I love that story. I think it's very fun. It's not collected anywhere except for a trade paperback called Spider-Man, Am I an Avenger? Which just has a bunch of Spider-Man stories where he's an Avenger or where he fights with the Avengers.
All right. Nice. Good choice.
Silly. I don't know.
I'm glad Spider-Man made it on this list, though.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how often he's going to appear in this list.
Well, we'll see. I got a couple more.
I don't know. All right. Jason, what's your number five?
My number five is a story about a Man of Steel, a certain Batman, a wondrous woman meeting the Avengers. It is, of course, JLA Avengers, also titled Avengers JLA.
I can't believe you picked this story.
It is the Justice League unites with the Avengers, Superman, Batman, and the other members of the JLA to join forces with Captain America, Iron Man, and many of the other Avengers to fight a threat so immense that it threatens two dimensions. Now, this is created by Kurt Busiek and George Perez, who, in my opinion, are the greatest Avengers creators ever. This was a crossover that was supposed to happen in 1979. It didn't get completed until 2004. And it's sort of the ultimate comic book fans book. I felt you had to talk about it. Basically, the mechanics of the story are really stupid. It's Krona, the old Owen, basically travels across the multiverse. He meets the Grandmaster and they decide to play a game. And if Krona wins, the Grandmaster will introduce him to Galactus, who is a being who witnessed creation. And if he loses, Krona has to spare the Grandmaster's universe because Krona was going to destroy the Marvel Universe. And of course, the Grandmaster picks the Avengers and Krona picks the Justice League. And the interesting thing that is about this story is it's one of those stories where it's all about the interactions between the Justice League and the Avengers. So the Flash arrives in the Marvel Universe and he finds himself lynched by an anti-mutant mob. The Avengers land in Metropolis and they're greeted by screaming fans who want their autograph and they're surprised by that. And even Superman, it's interesting, doesn't call the Marvel Universe a nice place. The DC Universe is a much brighter place, and they make fun of the hokey science of the DC Universe. Like, Iron Man says that Flash's cosmic treadmill makes no sense. While Quicksilver visits the Flash Museum and finds himself amazed that these people celebrate their heroes. It's said in
That's
the
cute that Quicksilver thinks he's a hero.
Yeah. But in this story, it seems that the JLA instantly realize that they're like the more powerful team than the Avengers, which is what all fans realize. Although Aquaman says this line in the book, and I quote, he says, "The heroes here seem less powerful in general than at home, but their world is stacked against them." And this whole story leads to like all these fanboy moments of Superman deciding that Captain America should lead them. He's the better leader. But eventually the fight all comes down to where Superman's the only one that survives, and he has Captain America's shield and Mjolnir in his hand. And it's like the ultimate fan image. Everybody has seen that. Even if you haven't read this storyline, you've seen this image. It's Superman holding Mjolnir and Captain America's shield, and he's grimacing like the 90s.
I'm sure someone used it in a tweet against one of your opinions.
Sure. But for me, this is like the ultimate fanboy story of the Avengers. And so like if you're thinking about Avengers lists that, you know, you should read or you should check out, I definitely think you should check this out. Now, I will caution you, this storyline is very, very buried in continuity and very buried in, there's going to be a lot of panels that, unless you're a comic book expert, you're going to be like, who is that person? Mm-hmm. I have no idea who that is. But for me, the character moments and the amazing George Perez art elevate it above that. So that's why it's my number five.
Cool. I love a good George Perez art as an excuse to read anything story.
That is a solid choice.
Yeah. And I knew I'd give some crap by putting the Justice League on here. But again, like if we were to do the top five Justice League stories, I guarantee you I'd probably put the story on there.
Totally.
There, let's do. So, all right, Ashley, what is your number four?
My number four is a little something called Avengers Disassembled. It's a crossover event that involves the Avengers, Fantastic Four, Captain America. I don't know why he's on this list instead of listed as the Avenger, Spider-Man and Thor, because they all had separate titles at the time. It's the beginning of Brian Michael Bendis's Avengers run, and it sees the destruction of the traditional roster and an exile of several key members and the introduction of new members. So Sal, very conveniently and helpfully for Ashley in his first choice, talked about how Spider-Man gets invited to join the Avengers a lot. And he's like, nah, man, like I'm a 16-year-old lone wolf. I don't need no help, yo. Because that's how Spider-Man talks.
Is your dream Spider-Man 16?
My ideal Spider-Man is like married 30-year-old Peter Parker.
You want middle-aged Spider-Man.
Right on.
I do, with a family and a cute tiny baby that in the very first Renew Your Vows story dressed up in a Daredevil PJs. I love me domestic Peter Parker.
Yeah.
But he's he's often relegated to the role of teenager. And by the time Bendis got to Avengers, he was enjoying the status that he enjoyed until he bailed out of Marvel of you can do whatever you want, Mr. Bendis. We're really glad that you showed up today. And they basically, not unwarranted, but he was basically allowed to reinvent the Avengers in a way that maybe hadn't been attempted up to this point. I don't necessarily believe that, but in a way that reshaped the teams as we know them. This was the introduction of Spider-Man as a standing member of the Avengers. This is the introduction, folding in of characters like Wolverine and some of the more powerful X-people as standing members. And I truly think it's one of the best things Brian Michael Bendis has ever written. I would add in his new Avengers to that, I think is really, really great. And just the way it changed the teams at the time, I think it deserves recognition and I think it deserves to be read. And particularly in the wake of what happens at the end of Avengers Infinity War, I think a story about a reshaping and a re-rostering of the team could be powerful, could be something that you would want to read. And the way that I think this could be folded into the film universe, this would give an opportunity to build in the Fantastic Four connection if the rumors are true that Marvel Studios does in fact have that license back. This is unconfirmed, unsubstantiated, Ashley making conjectures out of turn. It would also allow all of the Phase 1 Avengers to get taken off the board if their contracts aren't renewed, but maybe not to kill them. And they could just be kept in a box and then brought out again later if the actors decide to reprise their roles or if Marvel decides to recast them. So I even think stealing the title Avengers Disassembled, it has a lot of ring to it in the way that Age of Ultron did, even if that movie was ultimately unsatisfying in my opinion. And when the Russos came out and they said, oh, the title of the next Avengers movie is gonna scare people, Jason immediately said, well, it's going to be Avengers Disassembled. So I knew immediately it was going to go on my list when we came around to doing this podcast.
I actually have changed my thought on that. I actually now think it's going to be Avengers Forever.
Oh, yeah?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Robert Downey Jr. is like, I'm going to play Iron Man until I die.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because the Russo brothers have now backed that claim up, and now they've been like, we put so much hype on this title, it'll never live up to expectations.
Yeah. Sometimes I think that if you work on a movie, you shouldn't be allowed to talk about it. Yeah.
I think they should have just kept it in Infinity War Part 2. So.
Yeah, I agree, and it should have been the next one.
Ashley, let me ask you a question about it. So Avengers Disassembled was like three issues. I think it was like Avengers 500, mm-hmm. 501, 502. Now, are you counting the beginning of New Avengers in this?
I am tacitly. How,
like the first six issues?
Yeah. Okay. Because, well, you like Jason mentioned, you can just pick up Avengers Disassembled, but you're going to like it. And then if you do, you should roll right into his New Avengers.
Oh, yeah. And they are part of the same story.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
But in my headcanon, yes, because it's all really the New Avengers. But the first trade is called Avengers Disassembled.
Yeah, I just wanted to claim it, because I think if you buy the Avengers Disassembled trade, it only has those three issues.
It does, and then it has some back matter.
Yeah, but although I wonder if there's new collections of Brian Michael Bendis's New Avengers, and I would hope they put Avengers Disassembled just in the beginning of that.
Well, I'm not going to lie, I haven't read it in a number of years, so just get it all on the Marvel app, guys.
There you go.
All right. They do have, I know there's an extra issue, like there's some kind of Disassembled bonus issue that has the rest of the team kind of like in the smoking ruins of Avengers Mansion, and they're all kind of like toasting to say goodbye to the old guard and kind of like trading
that's
off.
Right.
And
are they toasting marshmallows as well?
I think they just toast with champagne and water.
All right.
Oh. I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I'm going to say that. And Vision's headstone is what they use to cinch them.
Right. Makes sense.
Sal, what is your number four?
Man, Avengers Assembled, I was on my list and it was much higher.
Don't reveal it yet. You can
still keep it there, and then we'll do your opinion on it when we get there.
Oh, fair enough. All right. Well, then I'll leave it alone. In that case, I'm going to toss out a story called Avengers: The Children's Crusade by Alan Heinberg and Jim Shun.
Oh, that's definitely on my list.
I have, not to steal anything from it, but I gotta say, I loved this story, and I really didn't expect to. And I think it was because it was called The Children's Crusade. I'm a stickler for titles, and I just kind of was like, children, because of the inherent juvenile, you know, analogy of children, it just made me feel like, man, maybe it's not really up to snuff. Dude, was I wrong? Not only does it actually work as a chapter two to Avengers Disassembled, but it also
it's
such a great elevation for the young Avengers, a woefully underutilized team that never seems to quite get their due. And so I always point to Children's Crusade because I'm like, this is their due. This is the big story for them. If you're not familiar with the story out there, the Children's Crusade is literally just the young Avengers go to the new Avengers and they're like, you know, things are popping off and we've got to act. And the Avengers and the young Avengers kind of like butt heads against a newly minted romance between the amnesiac Scarlet Witch and Doctor Doom. And it's a solid Doctor Doom story. It's a classic Avengers tale with brand new characters. And I don't mean brand new as in they were just recently created, but certainly brand new to readers of Avengers books, especially at that time, because it doesn't even feature the core members of the Avengers. It's about the new Avengers. So there's a lot of really great stuff to unpack from that story. And yet it still manages to be, it's for me a perfect retcon story because it manages to tell an original story from beginning to end while also playing with continuity, changing deaths and other character arcs while also creating some new ones and going back in time. There's a lot of really, really cool stuff in the story. And of course, Jim Chung's pencils can't be beat. It just looks terrific. With the one notable exception, there's one odd panel where Dr. Doom is like far away and they don't draw his face. So there's just literally a smiley face, just two dots and a smiley face line. Really awkward. Go online, you'll find it anywhere. It's the only egregious moment in the book. The rest of the time, it's just an amazing looking and amazingly written title. I'd never read anything by Alan Heinberg before, and this made me go back and go like, what else has this dude written? Because it's really good.
And then he wrote the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Which is also tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
That's a great choice. I am sad to say that did not make my list because it got forced out by other stories, but I love that story. And I agree with you. The Young Avengers don't get their due.
They do not. All right, Jason.
Well, just by virtue of... Oh, sorry, God.
No, please.
I was going to say, just by virtue of the fact that they are called the Young Avengers, implying that they'll be the replacement Avengers, and they're never going to stop like they're never going to let Thor age.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I've actually said this for years that I've for a while there, I had an idea that Netflix should make the Young Avengers TV show because it would be the only TV show that could actually connect just by the fact of you'd have a sort of Captain America and a sort of Iron Man and a sort of Hawkeye on your team.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
So, all right. So my number four is probably I'm going to say the most divisive choice on my entire list because I really felt Brian Michael Bendis had to get on this list somehow, just with all of his contributions to the Avengers and everything that he changed with the Avengers. But I had a hard time thinking about what stories really matter to me in his run. And I eventually settled with Dark Avengers.
Nice.
Dark Avengers is my number four. Dark Avengers in the series 1 through 16. Basically, if you don't know what this is, in the wake of Secret Invasion, Norman Osborn takes over S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Avengers creating his own Dark Avengers team. It was basically all the criminals of the Marvel Universe who were the Thunderbolts at the time, which is Marvel's Suicide Squad. Norman took Tony's armor and he painted it like the U.S. flag and he became the Iron Patriot. And this is the first appearance of that. And this is where all the villains disguise themselves for the public. His team was the Sentry, Ares, Novar, who was actually Grant Morrison's Marvel boy, who now was disguised as Captain Marvel. Moonstone was disguised as Miss Marvel. Venom, who was Mark Gargan, who was actually the Scorpion, he actually made himself just look like Black Spider-Man. Bullseye dressed like Hawkeye. And then Wolverine's disgruntled son, Dawkins, made himself look like Wolverine. This is basically an Avengers book led by the villains. And most of the book is not really them fighting other characters. It's them trying to figure out how to betray each other, or Moonstone spends a lot of the time trying to take over the team. And Brian Michael Bendis, I think his legacy to the Avengers is how much he shook up the Avengers and how much he changed. And to me, this is where he shook up the Marvel Universe the most. The fact that he made and the fact that there's a book out there called Dark Avengers and it's led by Norman Osborn, I think, is a credit to his entire legacy. And the other fact about it is that those 16 issues are pretty self-contained because number one starts right after Secret Invasion and number 16 ends right before Siege, which Siege is where Norman Osborn, of course, got thrown out of office.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of self-contained. Like you can kind of just read Dark Avengers and all you need to know is that, oh, the villains are the Avengers now? Weird. But it's the only choice on my list that doesn't star, I think, any of the Iron Man or Captain America or Thor. But I for me, if I were to give any big credit to Bendis, it would be for this storyline, Dark Avengers.
Can I just say something about Dark Avengers?
Yes, please.
It was edged off my list narrowly. I remember reading Dark Avengers and thinking to myself at the time, oh, that's a cool idea, because I had been spoiled on so many really good ideas that not only Marvel, but also Bendis himself was putting out, especially under the Avengers banner at that time. Like, I loved Secret Invasion. I really enjoyed House of M when it was happening. I loved Disassembled and New Avengers. Like, I was really on board. So when Dark Avengers came, I'm like, this is cool. It wasn't until much later that you realized how kind of fresh, new, and awesome that idea was, and how rare it would become in this new Marvel world. I was just like, man, that is a really cool story. And now if they did it again, it would be such a retread. And I don't think it would be handled with the same kind of like gravitas that it did then.
Yeah, because now it's become the thing that, oh, we're going to make the Avengers fresh by throwing X-Men characters on them. Or, oh, we're going to make the Avengers fresh by like, it's Cap and Thor and Iron Man again.
Right. Yeah, no, this is a cool idea. Like, how about bad guys are the Avengers? I mean, just the Machiavellian idea of Norman Osborn going, we don't have an evil Captain America. I'll just paint myself like the American flag.
Well, Jason also loves the Thunderbolts. So.
I do love the Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts is a cool idea.
I'm not a big fan of this section of the Thunderbolts where they turned into the criminals, but I do. Yeah, the fact that Norman Osborn is Captain America and Iron Man in one. Also, this started the trend of Bendis having characters steal Iron Man armors, like like Riri Williams and Doctor Doom now. So, you might not know this about me, but I wear contacts, and I do wear glasses. just like Superman. I like to hide my vision problems behind the smooth mask of contacts. But one of the most annoying things about wearing contacts is having to go and get your new prescription each year and having to go to the store and get more boxes, especially if you're like me and your prescription hasn't changed in years. So let me tell you about Simple Contacts. Now, Simple Contacts is an awesome new app that makes renewing your contact lens prescription and buying contacts so easy. You can literally do it in 5 minutes from anywhere. All you need is a phone or a computer, your current contacts, and 10 feet of space. Now, a real doctor reviews your test, renews your prescription, and you can buy whatever brand you already wear. Now, I'm not saying that you should never go back to an eye doctor. And a real quick disclaimer, Simple Contacts isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. They only test your current prescription that still helps you see 20/20, and they renew your prescription. They don't write completely new prescriptions or examine your eye health. So come on, you need to do that for your health, people. Get those eyes checked. But this will help you out and make sure that you never run out of contacts at any time. Because if you're flying towards a spaceship chasing a wizard, the last thing you want to do is turn back around because you forgot your contacts. This app makes it so easy. I was surprised with how quick I was able to get my new contacts. And FYI, the prices at Simple Contacts are unbeatable. Not only is the prescription only $20, compare that to, you know, the annual appointment that could sometimes be up to $200, which is expensive, their contacts are priced super competitively and shipping is free. I said that again, free. And you can save even more because my listeners are going to get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order with code GEEKHISTORY. So to save $30 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/geekhistory and enter the code GEEKHISTORY at checkout. Again, that's simplecontacts.com/geekhistory and use the code GEEKHISTORY at checkout. Now back to the show. All right, Ashley, what is your number three?
I'm so glad that you just talked about people doing bad things and that Sal brought up fear itself, because that's my number three.
Fear itself?
Yeah, because I love the idea of fear itself.
Oh, okay.
Fear itself is basically what if Blackest Night, but with Thor hammers. And It really falls apart in the end. But I think the idea of it is so good and so interesting. And I love the puzzle of who's allowed to pick up the hammer and the implications of that. And the MCU has played with that a lot. So I would love to see it further brought out. And I think it's something that in adaptation, you could work out some of the hinkier things, particularly if all these rumors about Marvel getting to fold everybody back in are true, this could be a really fun way cinematically to, with a shorthand, tell the audience why these characters are good and why they are worthy and why these characters are bad and why they're not worthy. It would give the Hulk something interesting to do, which is this ongoing concern about, like, what are we going to do with our Hulk character? Because apparently in Avengers 3, we couldn't afford to have Mark Ruffalo turn into the Hulk because that's a very expensive process. But we could stick him in Hulkbuster armor for some reason that I guess we already had some kind of model for. So that was okay. And I just like Fear Itself, and I want more people to read it because it does get a bad rap because it falls apart at the end. It's also, if you're a Matt Fraction stan, if you're a big fan of his Hawkeye run, then this is pre that. So go pick it up and see what else he can do there. So yeah, Fear Itself is my number three.
Good choice. Fear Itself is cool. It was the forgotten Marvel event for me. It's just so good. Stuart Immonen's pencils are terrific in that one, too.
It is very forgotten. And it's a book that you can find in a lot of people's sale bins. So if you don't want to pay full price for it, you can get it real cheap.
Yeah.
I am not a Fear Itself fan simply for the fact of how it basically torpedoed Bucky. Because Captain America, the Winter Soldier, was coming out.
Yeah, well, then, and yeah, I bet you love how they treat him in the movies.
Well, I think that that's something that I That's why Fear Itself wouldn't have ever made it on my top five because of that. And also, you said it at the very beginning. Yeah, it's a great idea that kind of falls apart.
Yeah,
and it's funny if Fear Itself had either come out before Blackest Night or I would say even 10 years after Blackest Night.
Like they came out a little too close for each other.
Yeah,
they were
within a couple years of each other, so you could look at both of them and be like, oh. Okay.
Yeah. Well, this one doesn't have zombies, so it's the one I read.
Yeah.
And I'm also willing to bet that I've read less Avengers stories than either of you. So it was definitely going to make it on my list either way.
All right, Sal, what is your number three?
My number three is another Bendis story. It was the thing that actually edged out Dark Avengers for me, or Dark Reign. And it was it's actually two stories that I think they're only called two stories because they wanted to sell two trades. And it's New Avengers Revolution and the Trust. It is the story arc that takes place right after Civil War and right before Secret Invasion.
Yes.
Well, that's a good story.
When the New Avengers are hiding out in Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum, Doctor Strange has a cloak spell over the sanctum that makes it look like it closed, and it says, like, coming soon, a neighborhood Starbucks. It's the New Avengers brought low and desperate, and they're hiding and scraping out an existence, and they're trying to make sense of this world. And right during Revolution and Trust, they find out, okay, we're fugitives, Captain America's dead, or so we think, and we're just trying to do good. We're barely a team at this point. This story starts in issue 27 and runs until 37. But it's, you know, they've only been the New Avengers for 27 issues, and a bulk of those were Civil War where they were fighting each other anyway. So they're barely together, and everything is really dark and dreary. And Doctor Strange has now joined the team, and then they find out they're Skrulls, and I remember thinking, like, at the time, oh, Skrulls, okay, yeah. But the implication that Bendis attaches to the Elektra Skrull that they reveal at the end of Revolution is so damning and deep. It just made me go like, oh, this is not like any other Skrull story I'd ever read, where now the implication is, no, there are Skrulls in major facets of our government, maybe even our own teams. And maybe that might explain why Iron Man's such a jerk right now. And just all the implication of that, and just the visceral nature of the story and how everybody was treated and the character interactions and everything just really, really rang home for me. Of course, there's also Lionel Yu's pencils, which are terrific. And it really complemented the dark, gritty nature of the story. I loved Revolution and Trust. I don't know what else to call it. It's just those two stories.
No, that's fine. It's also the Ronin storyline.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Ronin's also in there.
Which is a fun thing that maybe we'll get in the movie.
Yeah, we might get it in a movie. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, the Len Francis Yu are this. I do agree this is Brian Michael Bendis' best New Avengers group.
Yeah, for sure. Also has a lot of great hits if you're a MCU, not MCU TV fan.
Right.
I don't know what that universe, Marvel MTVU.
I guess they just call it the Netflix universe, but
NU.
Right, the new.
No, yeah. Len Francis Yu.
MC New, MCNU. Marvel loves their acronyms, so
they do.
And their adjectives. All right, Jason, what is your number three?
My number three is a story that's not even called The Avengers.
Get out.
It's called The Ultimates.
Oh.
I am concluding Ultimates Volume 1 and 2 in this by Mark Miller because it's kind of one interconnected story. So that's the Ultimates 1 through 13, Ultimates 2, 1 through 13, and Ultimates 2 Annual Number 1. So if you don't know what these are, in the early 2000s, Marvel relaunched a line of comics called The Ultimate Universe to basically remake their heroes as if they had been created around 2001. So the Avengers became the Ultimates because that's what the universe was called. If you want to find any one comic series that inspired Avengers 1, then this is the book that did it. And all you have to do is look at the amazing comic design of Captain America in this book by Brian Hitch, because I don't know how in 80 years of drawing Captain America, how was it a lovely British man named Brian Hitch was the only one that was like, hey, maybe he should wear a Kevlar helmet because he's a soldier. So I love that. I think Cap's Kevlar helmet that the movies have now taken is like one of the best design. It's Cap's best costume. I really do think it's his Ultimates costume is his best costume that he's ever had. So these books were kind of designed like fun summer blockbusters, and they're very bombastic. And basically, they went back to basics on all the characters. Cap is a pure soldier. He's very mean. He shoots guns, and also like he talks like he's from the 1940s. Like he doesn't quite understand rap music, and he doesn't really know if he wants to do segregation. He kind of enforces segregation at a couple points, which is what would happen if you were from the 1940s.
Yeah, which is something that they coast over a little for the sake of the movies are only 2 hours or now 2 hours well, to change well, long. Like he adapts very quickly.
He adapts very quickly. One of the best scenes in Ultimates 2 is that he decides to get an apartment in Brooklyn. But he, of course, hasn't kept up with the time. So he gets an apartment exactly where he grew up.
I love that.
And he gets robbed. And he's blown away that he gets robbed because he's like, this is a very nice neighborhood. But everybody on his team is just like, Cap, you're crazy. Like, you're basically living in the ghetto, Cap.
Right.
Tony is a pure alcoholic. And I think I love the Ultimates Iron Man armor where it's very blocky and it's very chunky. And it's the only Iron Man armor where it has the design where it would fit his nose.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rest of them would smash his nose. Hulk is a weapon of mass destruction. No one is sure if Thor is actually a god or not. They think he might be lying. And then this is the book that introduces the Sam Jackson Nick Fury.
Also, Hulk eats people.
Hulk eats people. And also aircraft carrier helicarriers that look like giant aircraft carriers. That comes from this book. So this book it's a little mean. But I almost think that this is the purest Avengers book that you can hand to somebody that's only seen the movies.
Yes.
Because it's basically a version, it's kind of an alternate universe version of the movie that comes to life. Like, you know, the first arc is they fight the Hulk, then they fight the Chitauri, and then in volume 2, they basically fight an evil version of the Avengers led by Loki.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all one big storyline. And I kind of think this is must read. Like if you are ever going to do anything with the Avengers, whether draw them, write them, or just enjoy them, this is a must read Avengers book, even though it's called The Ultimates. And I don't even want to talk too much more about it because there's so many twists that you'll just give them away. And I really think you should experience this book as fresh as possible.
I want to say that I do objectively think this is the best Avengers story. But I left it off my list because I knew someone else would put it on theirs. Oh. I did that with a couple of them because I was like, someone else will get to this.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, this is popcorn Avengers, but it's almost like you can totally see Mark Miller distilled this down in like 2002. You can understand when Joss Whedon was working on the Avengers movie where he was just like, I'm just going to lift that. I'm just going to lift that.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Just gonna, like, this is the Avengers movie before the... So much to the point that they did the same thing where they didn't call the enemies the Skrulls. They called them the Chitauri. That came from this book.
Yeah.
So that's my number three. Ashley, we're in the top two. This is the creme de la creme of the Avengers stories.
Oui, c'est ça.
Oui. So what is your number dos?
Well, I don't speak Spanish, so I have no answer for that.
Deux.
Mon numéro deux, c'est une histoire des Avengers que je pense que c'est très bon. Mais ça l'a déjà parlé sur le sujet.
Stop being smarter than us.
My number two, Sal already mentioned, is Avengers Children's Crusade. It's so good. Also, Jason had to bully me into reading it, and I can't believe that I had never read it before.
Isn't that a weird world where I had to do that? You like things with children.
I do. I do. I'm a big legacy character fan. And I love the second generation of heroes. And I can't believe I hadn't read this before I met Jason. But here we are. Sal did a really good job summarizing what it's about. And, you know, Marvel has spent the last 2 or 3 years until that one horrible Comics Pro Summit making a real stride into the world of legacy characters and diversifying the face of their characters. And I truly think it all stems from what they did in Young Avengers. Because that, you know, Young Avengers is, what, 10 or 12 years old now? I didn't write down what year it came out, guys. I'm great at math.
Yeah, it's right. Like 12.
And all the things that they were doing by having the two leaders of the team be queer, by having Kate Bishop come up and really come into her own as Hawkeye and learning how to live in that identity alongside Clint Barton, who was coming back and thinking about reprising that role at the time, having Eli, having a black Captain America and having him be a legacy character of the first Captain America who predated Steve Rogers. Like, all of that is this kind of diversity talk that we're seeing in comics a lot over the last 5 years, but it's predating all of that. I think if that, and look, Young Avengers is a well-loved, well-respected story, but I think if it was coming out now, or if it had started maybe even 2 or 3 years ago, I think it would be transcendent. And I think, and Sal touched a little bit on this, I think because of the title, Children's Crusade, which I think is an intelligent title, it's very evocative of an important historical event in where, you know, where children were forced to take on the roles of adults. But I think sometimes that prohibits people from wanting to dive into it for the first time. And then when you look at the cover and you don't recognize a handful of the characters, I think that's unfortunate because it's really, really tremendous. I also think if it were adapted cinematically, it would give Scarlet Witch and Vision the potential to step into mentor roles, which I would really love to see. Vision is not part of the original story, but Scarlet Witch is. Scarlet Witch is not a favorite character of mine.
Well, Little Vision is.
Right.
Young Vision is.
Right. but not Paul Bettany-esque.
Oh, sure.
But
sure,
I wouldn't mind if they made a movie of it if they decided just to keep it Paul Bettany.
Oh, heck
instead
yeah.
of doing Kid Vision. Because he's tremendous.
I'm sure Paul Bettany has a kid.
He does. He has two, in fact. I follow him on Instagram. but I think Scarlet Witch is a character. She's a character I've had issues with in the past. But I think in the latest Avengers movie, she really came into her own. And I would love to see her take onus of a team in this way. And plus two of them are her children. And the way they get the children is really convoluted and weird. But I love Billy. So I'm here for it. I'm willing for spirit babies. Please just give me Wiccan. Please, please,
yeah.
Please, please, please. All right, Sal, what's your number two?
My number two is actually one of yours. It's Avengers Disassembled.
Hey, look at that. We did a swappy swap.
Exactly. Somebody, you did a great job explaining it, so I won't bother to do that. But somebody recently asked me on Twitter, if I want to get into the Avengers after the movie, what book should I read? And I recommended Avengers Disassembled. And I know that it's like the worst day in Avengers history. I know that it basically takes off at least half, if not more, of the roster and puts them in the ground. But I really like it as an Avenger story because, number one, you test the mettle of the Avengers. You throw them at each other and at some of their worst adversaries. You also get to see a modernization. Like, it's not, I wouldn't recommend, I like it, but I wouldn't recommend like the Kree-Skrull War because of how kind of like hard to get through it is, especially if your only exposure to the Avengers property is through the movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but somebody like Brian Michael Bendis is like, okay, I can understand it. There's an easier translation from the movie to the comic. Avengers Disassembled also manages to, with that bonus issue after 503, you get this kind of like legacy reference where they all toast all the fallen members of the Avengers, and it's like a, I don't remember how many panels I think it is. I think it might be 9 panel grid that shows you all these different Avengers that are not featured, that you don't see, that are just mentioned by name. And you get to see like 9 more Avengers saying those names. And you're like, wow, this Avengers was a really, really prolific team. There were a lot of people on this team. Like, I wonder what else there was. You know, there's a history there. Also, there's a beautiful backup that shows you like these recreated images of the best moments in Avengers history. And those alone kind of sell each of those Avenger stories to your potential readers. And so I think it Disassembled is a great way to show you like, okay, well, this is the end of the Avengers, more or less. But it's a great way for you to kind of like want to go back and hopefully dive into the rich history of the Avengers. Like, a lot of people say to read Avengers Forever, I say Disassembled because it's more, it's easier to get into, I think. I think it's just easier to jump in.
I agree with you. It is a good book. It's funny, I was reading an interview with Brian Michael Bendis very recently, and he said that he's not going to do what he did with Avengers. And he was
destroying it and bringing in new people.
Well, he talked about that because, you know, he's taken over Superman. And he said in the interview that when he got into Avengers, his whole pitch for Avengers Disassembled was that he was like, I felt like a kid coming in, kicking all the toys away. And yeah, he said that at the time, he thought it was cool, but he says, like, looking back on it, he was like, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that. But it's interesting because I think that's what makes that...
Oh, no, I think he absolutely should
have
done that.
That's what made that story work. Like, it is a funny, like, before that point, people were like, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and the Avengers? That's stupid.
Oh, he got editorial pushback. They were, like, mad at him. They're apparently, from what I remember of him talking about those days, like, editors and writers at the summit were, like, yelling at him, like, you can't put Wolverine on the Avengers. You can't put Spider-Man on the Avengers.
I love the idea of all the Marvel people fighting at a summit because in my brain, and the Marvel summit is very well publicized. It's a very classic retreat that they go on where they work out their storylines. In my brain, it's just a bunch of, like, sweaty people inside a cabin yelling at each other, which I know is not what it is at all, but when I think of a retreat, I immediately like, you're going to the woods to not speak to other humans.
It's funny, I have the exact same visualization. It is that they go to the Colorado Rockies and yeah. just kind of like they have pajamas on, they have a roaring fire, and they just start talking about what to do.
Jonathan Hickman's like roasting marshmallows in front of the fire. That's so funny.
I think it's a lot less glamorous.
probably a lot more steak dinners. All right, yeah. Jason. Now that we're done with our fan fiction about the Marvel editorial and creative staff, what's your number two?
There's another Avengers writer out there besides Kurt Busiek that needs credit on an Avengers list if you're going to do an Avengers list, and that is Roger Stern.
Ah,
and
classic.
My pick is Avengers Under Siege, which is the Avengers number 270 to 277. Now, this is a classic story where the Masters of Evil take... the Avengers Mansion. And in one of the greatest comic book epics of all time, Baron Zemo, who leads the Masters of Emo, of Evil, not Emo, they could also be, they're the Masters of Evil and Emo. They struck at the very heart of the Avengers as he leads his new revamped team and they take on the team's home and they win. Every good superhero team, I think, has an opposite. So the X-Men have the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the Justice League have the Crime Syndicate or the Justice League, and in this tale, Baron Zemo, he brings on the Wrecking Crew, Tiger Shark, and Goliath, and their whole goal is we're going to take on Avengers Mansion. We're going to control Avengers Mansion. And they do it. Now, this is a time when the Avengers have Hercules there, and he gets to do like a one-man stand against the Invaders. It's probably Hercules' best story because I don't really care that much for Hercules.
You don't like him on New Avengers?
Not really. He's kind of just a big lout that's drunk. But in this storyline...
you mean Iron Man.
Yeah. In this storyline, he actually gets to take down, or he gets to like do a one-man stand against the Masters of Evil. Also, this is a story where Jarvis is tortured.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever hear anybody talk about the storyline where Jarvis is tortured, this is the one. And Jarvis never gives up any information on the Avengers. Jarvis holds true, which makes him one of the greatest Avengers characters, in my opinion. This conflict really hits home, I feel, in a way that many Avengers stories don't. Because a lot of Avengers stories are kind of like Justice League stories. They're all like, let's go into space and fight the cosmic-y.
Yeah.
And this storyline is simply a bunch of villains are coming into our home. How do we stop them? That's it. And it's very dramatic, and it's very... the characterization is so strong. Like I said, Roger Stern is one of the best Avengers writers. And it's funny because I reread the storyline, I would say, about a year ago, which is why it's like fresh in my head.
For our Jarvis lesson.
Mm-hmm. And this... Roger Stern... is almost as dense as, I would say, Brian Michael Bendis in terms of like his plotting. When you read one issue of this storyline, like say you just read the first issue that's 270, you will read that issue and you will look at modern writers and think, oh, modern writers would have turned that one issue into six issues.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it's a little dated. I am going to admit to you, it's a little dated, but I think if you're looking for a classic Avengers storyline, this is the one to read, because again, it's just the Avengers fighting for their home. And when you read that Jarvis torture scene, you're going to have a newfound respect for Jarvis that I don't think you ever had before. Avengers Under Siege is definitely my number two.
Wow. Good pick, man. I had never even heard of that story.
There is a trade of that story. Like, and you can see it's the cover image is Thor. This is when Thor had a beard at the time. And he's like grimacing and he's coming at the camera. And this is when they come back into their home to reclaim it.
That's cool.
Thor should always have a beard.
I agree.
Yeah,
Thor should
like
always
beard
have
Thor
a beard. Yeah. All right, Ashley, the moment is here.
Yes.
What is your number one Avengers story. Now, I'm a little worried that you said that there was one I was going to say that you shouldn't be on the list. And so far, I think they're okay. So I think this is going to be the list. I'm wondering if you're just going to be like, Suicide Squad, hell to pay.
No.
What's your number one?
My number one is Ultron Unlimited.
Oh,
or as I like to call it, Ultron Unleashed, which is not what it's called. We did do a full review of it here when Age of Ultron was coming out, to like, I don't know, 2016. I'm not good at numbers, guys.
Go Google it.
Yeah, where we broke that down. It's a Kurt Busiek story. The Avengers, and George Perez, of course, the Avengers must confront their greatest foe yet, Ultron, the sentient robot created by Avenger Hank Pym, who has seized control of the world's media and destroyed the Eastern European country of Slovenia, which we don't know how to pronounce. They made up a different fake country for Avengers Age of Ultron. That sounds a little more like Slovakia.
Sokovia.
There you go. And I don't remember what it's called. I think this was the one that I thought you might be like, I don't know.
No, I'm fine with this one. This is Ultron's best story.
It is Ultron's best story. It's the origin of Ultron. I think it does a great job establishing Ultron as a truly frightening...
It's not really the origin of Ultron. Just wanted to... Don't want to step on your toes. No. No, Ultron was created like way back in the
60s. Oh, I thought this was the origin of Ultron for some reason.
This is basically where Ultron creates like, I think, a lot of duplicates of himself.
It is. Yeah. I don't know why. I think, maybe it's the origin of Jocasta, who's the wife. Maybe.
No, that was before this.
Well, then it's nobody's origin, but it's a great story.
I don't know what stories are getting meshed with,
I don't know either. But it's basically Ultron. I'll argue it's Ultron's only good story.
I think that's a fair point. Okay. Yes, argue that point. This is the origin of Ultron's only good story.
Yeah, nailed it. As a non-Ultron stan, that's where I come down on that. I'm sorry to any of our big Ultron people.
You know what? I'm going to allow it. I think you might be correct.
Yeah. When I first read it, I was pretty sour on the Scarlet Witch storyline because Wonder Man has come back and he's trying to romance her, but this is around the time, although not the origin, of the Scarlet Witch and Vision romance. And there's a big love triangle that's a subplot of the story that I think is silly. I've read it since we first read it for the podcast and I've softened on it a little bit. I think for the time, it's a pretty good story for Scarlet Witch. She's beginning to get some of her own utility, and she's forging an identity outside of her X-Men self. And I really kind of like that. I also like Hank Pym in this story a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I like seeing his contributions that matter to the Avengers because he gets stuck in the domestic abuse category, which is not an unreasonable criticism of the character, although he's not the only character who's ever hit a girl or someone that he's romantically interested in. And I think this is one of his more interesting stories where he's not an insane, crazy person, which often seems to happen to poor Mr. Pym. I think this is... maybe not the culmination of the Busiek-Perez run, but it's one of their most iconic. It shaped the Avengers story in a way that it made it all the way to a movie. Although I will say that I would love to see somebody who cared about the movie they were making get a chance to remake the Ultron saga, because I do think there is a great Ultron movie out there, and it's unfortunately not what we got. And I think that's a bummer, because I do think Ultron... cinematically could be more than just a Pinocchio joke.
It's funny because I remember when I saw Age of Ultron, there's a very famous line from this storyline, and it's a very famous panel of Thor stepping through a wall and his costume's all mangled and, and he has a hammer and he says, "Ultron, we would have words with thee." And I cannot believe that didn't make it into a movie.
Well, that was the beginning of, because the first Thor movie really did the pseudo Shakespearean speech, and we've just been phasing that out until now. He talks like you.
Yep, he says cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I would have bet money that he was going to do that before Age of Ultron came out. Yeah, I got a lot of criticisms about that movie.
I think we all
do. Just brought me right back.
That's
like,
a good choice. Ultron Unlimited, I will say, because just to know my bias here, I do think the Kurt Busiek, George Perez run, 1996 and on, is the greatest Avengers run.
Mm.
Kurt got to draw on it, or got to write for about, I think, 60 to 70 issues.
You own Lynn Omnibus.
Yes, I own the Omnibuses of both of his runs. And Ultron Unlimited is one of the better stories in that run.
Cool.
Yes, I agree. So, all right, Sal, we're here.
Yeah.
What do you think is the greatest Avengers story. What's your number one?
Okay, I'm going to catch a lot of hell for this because it's, for me, New Avengers Breakout.
Woo!
Ah, who cares? It's your choice,
that's
man.
That's a good choice.
Because here's the thing. I was always a street-level Marvel fan. So for me, the Avengers were always in their ivory tower or their beautiful mansion. They were always hoity-toity. It was always kind of like confusing to me why they were Earth's Mightiest Heroes when most of them were lame and or shot arrows. For me, I was always like, why? Like, why are they so great? They can't even hold their own books. Like, I don't understand. Like, I always called them the unsellables. And so when they decided, or Bendis decided, like, okay, screw it, I'm gonna grant Morrison JLA up the Avengers, and he just wipes them all off the table. I was on board. I'm like, okay. And I did not read Avengers Disassembled. I just read New Avengers. I just jumped on board with number one because I was like, oh, I was kind of getting back into comics at that time, and I'm like, let's try it out. And it sold me from like panel one or two. I'm like, oh, this is cool. I think it was just Electro talking to a shadowy figure and being like, I'm going to break out this cool prison. And I'm like, I'm on board. The story is, of course, written by Brian Michael Bendis with art by David Finch. It is a story just about the New Avengers forming. You still get Iron Man and Captain America, but you also add characters like Spider-Man. And, of course, later on, but not within Breakout, Wolverine. But you do get, and this is for me a big selling point, Luke Cage on the team.
Yes.
That's a very fair point.
This begins my love affair of the great Mr. Luke Cage. This dude was super cool. I always saw him, not necessarily as a joke, but like, I always saw like the Dr. Doom joke about where's my money, honey scene. There's this old story. I think it was a Fantastic Four story where Luke Cage invades Latveria and like slaps around Dr.
Yes.
Doom looking
for
like $25. And I was like, I don't know. It was, maybe it was the TR, maybe it was the chain belt, but I never really connected with Luke Cage until Bendis wrote him and put him on this team. And this whole story got me not only interested in reading this book called New Avengers, but it made me go back and go like, okay, let me check out New Avengers or Disassembled. And then I did. And that, like I said, how it sells the story and the lineage of the Avengers. It's the same way for me, the way the Star Trek movies kind of sell the mythology and the camaraderie of the characters. I was never a big TOS fan, but like I saw, I think Star Trek IV first. And even though it's the whales one, the cast had such a good time, it made me want to go back and understand and be part of the inside jokes and references. And New Avengers and by tangent, Avengers Assembled did the exact same thing for me. Just made me want to understand and be part of the Avengers lineage. And over time, it got me to find a newfound appreciation for stories like Ultron Unleashed or Kree-Skrull War, or even another story that got edged out of my list, which was Emperor Doom. Just so many really great and timeless Avengers stories that made it so that I was wrong about my preconceived ideas about what the Avengers were and what they meant. So for me, Avengers Breakout, even though it's not timeless, it's not epic, it's not even technically really an Avengers story, it's a New Avengers story. That's one of the best things for me because it got me to care about the Avengers.
That's the mark, I think, of a great comic book story is you read it and you immediately want to go back and be like, what happened in the past?
Yeah.
What is this? So that's good, man. It's totally an Avengers story. Avengers is in the title. It's totally an Avengers story.
That's true. Thank you. Right.
Yeah. Take that. Okay, Jason, take us home.
Yeah.
All right. My number one is Avengers Forever. Number 1 through 12. Now, this is the giant Mamma Jamma miniseries that Kurt Busiek co-wrote with Roger Stern.
Hey, yep. Jason's greatest hits.
while he was doing his Avengers run. It was drawn by Carlos Pacheco. Basically, it's 7 time-lost Avengers are plucked from the past, present, and future, and they must protect their longtime ally, Rick Jones, from death at the hands of Immortus, the Master of Time. To find out why Rick has been targeted for elimination, the Avengers must join forces with Kang the Conqueror, who's actually a younger Immortus, and they do a cosmic battle that stretches from the Old West to the end of time. This is pairing up the greatest Avengers writer, Kurt Busiek, with one of the most amazing artists of all time, Carlos Pacheco. If you haven't read his Fantastic Four run, you're losing out. You're missing something. The interesting thing is that Forever doesn't really lose sight of all the characters amid all the spectacle. It has a lot of continuity, which does make it very hard to read for newer fans. But I had to include this, and the reason why it became the greatest Avengers story, in my opinion, is because it touches every era of Avengers continuity. Also, the weird Team Lost Avengers team that it picks are great. Let me break down this team for you, okay? It's Captain America just shortly after the Captain America No More story. So this is a Captain America that's very disillusioned with America. This is Hawkeye from the Kree-Skrull War, where he was wearing a weird costume that didn't look like Wolverine. They have the insane and evil Yellow Jacket on this team.
See? Insane. I'm telling you.
They have modern day Wasp and modern day Giant Man. Yes, I did not misspeak. There are two Hank Pyms on this team. And also representing the future are Captain Marvel. This is the genus Peter David Captain Marvel that has the best design Captain Marvel, where he's like a blue face, and you know he has the he clanks his wristbands
together. Bands.
Yeah, and his mega bands. Thank you, Sal. And he becomes wondrous Captain Marvel. Rick Jones. That storyline is set up in this storyline, and also the last member is Songbird, who is a member of the Thunderbolts. But in this future, she's an Avenger. And it was interesting because at the same time, Kurt Busiek was writing Thunderbolts, where she was a criminal. So some of the member, like current Giant Man and current Wasp were like, what are you doing here? You're a criminal. And she's like, no, I'm not. I'm an Avenger. And she shows like her belt buckle on her ID card. So for me, as somebody who was reading Thunderbolts at the time that Avengers Forever was coming out, I was like, what? She like graduates? That's amazing. So I think that's like this team is so cool. Actually, this story even makes Infinity War look simple.
People gonna tweet you.
Yeah, good. I don't care because Avengers Forever is better. But Avengers Forever again is this Avengers team popping through time. They go to the Old West. They go to Roman times. They go to the far future. They drop into old storylines of the Avengers that it kind of has made me think that this could possibly be Avengers 4. They call it Avengers Forever and do a version of this storyline. Now, I don't know if that's correct or not. I have no idea. That's not what this podcast is about. We're talking about Avengers stories. This storyline to me, once you've read some of the other Avengers suggestions on our list, go, you know, some of Sal's lists, some of Ashley's list, then try Avengers Forever. And if you can make it through, because I think the ending is quite spectacular, I think you will agree that it is the most epic of Avengers stories simply because it references every Avenger, everything all the time. And it looks beautiful. The covers, go look up some of the covers for Avengers Forever. They are amazing and they're beautiful. And that is why the greatest Avengers writer on the greatest Avengers story, that's why Avengers Forever is my number one.
Nice.
All right. So as you guys know, like we do on our podcast every single week, we're doing the recommended reading. This week, it will be the top three choices from all three of our lists. So you'll see Sal's top three. You'll see Ashley's top three. You'll see my top three. Mm-hmm. And you can find that at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading. Go click on those choices. It takes you to Amazon. You can buy those books and you can just see as much Carlos Pacheco art as you want, because I know you're all going to buy Avengers Forever. Lastly, before we end this podcast, let's go into the honor roll. Ashley, what is that?
The honor roll is a wonderful place inside of our teacher's lounge where if you give us a 5-star review over on iTunes, we will read whatever you write. But please write nice things because we love you.
This week, Jonathan Adkins joins the honor roll. He gave us a 5-star review saying, this podcast contains dark magic. He says, I've been listening to Geek History Lessons since 2014. This podcast is a staple of my weekly routine, and I guarantee that it can for yours as well. Jason and Ashley are fantastic together and knowledgeable, as all good professors should be. And if you're looking for an information-driven podcast that has tons of humor and personality, then this is the podcast for you. From the West Coast Avengers, dun-dun, dun, dun, to the Church of Batman, to Spider-Man's first enemy, poverty, to Doctor Strange and Clea's antics. He's just naming off all our good jokes. This is a podcast guaranteed to make you smile as you enter your mind university. Well, thank you, Jonathan Adkins. Thank you for joining the Geek Culture Watson Honor Roll.
Thank you.
The Teacher's Lounge has plenty of fresh donuts and bagels, and you can use all the cream cheese you want. All right. If you want to join the Geek Culture Watson Honor Roll, go over to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. But something that you also need to do is you need to check out Sal. Sal, our listeners, I know, are going to want to follow you everywhere. Where can they do so?
Well, they can find the bulk of what we do, which is YouTube videos 5 days a week at youtube.com/comicpop or simply comicpop.net. Visit us there to find conversations about comic books and the comic book industry / comic book culture, where we do just in-depth analyses and discussions, usually humor-based and all around just genuine conversations with a bunch of really fun personalities. You'll find our show's back issues, our one of my new favorite shows, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, where we take a single issue of a couple of runs and just kind of like pick them apart and talk about which one's good, which one's bad, and which one's just plain ugly. These are all, of course, picks from my personal long box. So I kind of it's a little bit of a stacked deck, but I kind of know what's going on in there. And yeah,
and you do a show on your channel, right? Elseworlds Exchange, which is like a podcast. And now that people can download that as a podcast, correct?
Oh, that's right. You can go anywhere. iTunes, SoundCloud, but Podbean. Yeah, basically everywhere. Everywhere podcasts are found. But I would try iTunes.
Yeah, that's a great. I just wanted to make sure because I know, like, in case I'm on it too. But also, I wanted to make sure that in case you know some of our listeners or our podcast listeners, they might be like, "Oh, I don't like this Sal guy. I want to see if he has a podcast." So, Elseworlds Exchange, go listen to that one. But definitely subscribe to his YouTube channel because it is awesome. Something else that you should also do is you should download this podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, everywhere that a podcast exists. I guarantee you it's there. Just Google it, damn it. also, you can go to patreon.com/Jawin. That's J-A-W-I-I-N. And you can support the Mind University and become a super friend in our Hall of Justice. We do extra geek history lessons over there, a little bit extra nuggets for some your mind knowledge. And this week, Sal is going to be joining us. Because we're going to talk about what Avengers comic story should be a movie. And that's going to be a lot of fun. But you can only hear that at patreon.com/Jawin. Actually, where can the listeners go if they want to suggest topics for other top five Iron Man stories, top five Captain America stories? Where should they do that, Ashley?
If you want to recommend top five Young Avengers stories that we should read, you can head on over to geekhistorylesson.com, facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or hit us up on Twitter at @GHLpodcast. There's a bunch of ways to contact us in all of those places.
Yes, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. Follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And also follow Geek History Lesson at GHL Podcast. Sal, where can they find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/SalSaysWhat.
Sal says what. So go over there and do that. All right, now we're at the end of the podcast. Hashtag stick around, where after we do all the beats, we see that if you're stuck around to talk a little bit more. Sal, are there any stories that Ashley or I picked that surprised that you were surprised that we put on our list?
Oh man. I gotta say, I really dug the fact that that Ultron Unleashed was referenced. Woo! Or Ultron
Unlimited.
Which was called?
Unlimited. We all do.
Unlimited.
I think Unleashed is such a common comic book story title that we all like automatically go to that.
Yeah, no, I feel like I think you're right when you said like it should have been called that because yeah. In any case, that was a great story. We have that in our library, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. And Avengers Arena. That was the one that I was like, really?
That's a good pick.
Cool.
I gotta finish. I have never finished that story, and I really have to finish that book.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. I just haven't got around to it. Sal, I like, you know, you putting New Avengers on your list, I think is a fair point, because that is such a great jumping on point for people, that first trade, the breakout. And it's especially awesome, especially you can tell, because there's what I think is the best Avengers cartoon, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And if you haven't seen that cartoon, it's amazing. Don't watch Avengers Assemble. It sucks. Watch Earth's Mightiest Heroes. They start out their cartoon with a version of New Avengers.
Yeah, there's an episode called New Avengers.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Jason, that I was really surprised that you put JLA Avengers on yours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because to me, it's... and this is not a judgment call, but it's such a silly story.
It is a silly story.
I was surprised that you would include it. I'm not, you know, not a criticism, but I was just surprised.
Well, I'm gonna say this. I actually had a hard time coming up with my list because a lot of the Avengers stories are what I said, like they're cosmic-y, alien thing, Korvac. And to me, those
Korvac saga, Jesus.
Well, to me, those aren't satisfying stories. Mm-hmm. So when I was coming up with my list, I was having a hard time being like, man, how is it not cosmic saga? Because to be honest with you, you could make a top five list and it's nothing but all like the Avengers punches aliens.
I was also surprised that Civil War didn't make it on anyone's list.
I considered it for a while.
So did I, but I thought surely someone else will pick that.
Oh, no.
My mistake.
I'm not a huge fan of Civil War, though. I don't think it's as good as... I think it's good for what it changes in the Marvel Universe, but I don't think it's a great... I think it has a terrible ending.
Where Cap dies?
I don't even consider that as part of it. Like, basically, where Cap just gives up.
Yeah.
Like, Cap's just like, I surrender.
Yeah.
And
he literally gets tackled by 9/11, and then he just stops. Because like, if you notice, when he gets tackled, it's like a firefighter, it's a paramedic, it's a police officer, it's all the first responders from 9/11. It's like a little on the nose.
Yeah, and to me, I don't think Cap would ever give up. That's Cap to me. Cap never gives up.
Miller's Cap is kind of belligerent in that one too. Like he's just kind of desperate and clutching and I don't know.
But I did think about it. I honestly did consider it Civil War. It's funny. I was trying to think if there was another one that I thought should have been on the list that I was surprised nobody did. I actually was
Age of Ultron.
Oh man, no. Ugh. No.
Whatever the last incarnation of Secret Wars was.
I was surprised. I thought Sal might put something of Jonathan Hickman's Avengers run on here.
I'm not a huge fan of Hickman's run on Avengers. I like it. I think it's a little obtuse and difficult to penetrate.
That's for sure.
Like every Jonathan Hickman story.
Yeah. Like if you like, you know, after you've read everything from all of our lists, then maybe you might want to start reading Hickman. But like you have to start at the beginning and you can't skip anything. Otherwise,
you also need an encyclopedia.
Yeah, the Hickmacpedia.
That's more for East of West, if we're being honest.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's why I think he has one of the best Fantastic Four runs, because
it works for Reed.
It works for Reed, because you want Reed to say impossible words that you have no idea what they mean, because it makes you smarter.
That's the white suit FF, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Spidey joins the team for a minute.
Yeah. Jonathan Hickman creates the Future Foundation.
Yeah. I know. The Future Foundation is my favorite thing about Fantastic Four.
But for for Avengers, when you hear Cap talking like that, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cap ain't that smart. So
he's not. I mean, let's be honest. Cap's no genius.
All right. All right. I think that's enough of us sticking around. Guys, thank you so much. And excuse you, Ashley. You feel better? Do you need a glass of water?
Well, I spoke ill of Captain America, and now it's coming back to bite me.
Oh, is that what it is?
I said he wasn't that smart.
Karma Cap? Okay.
Yeah.
Guys out there, thank you so much for listening. Sal, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Wow, thank you so much for having me. It was great.
It was a pleasure to have you on. I think we should bring you on for more top five lists.
For sure.
I am Jason Avenging Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And Professor Ashley, would you please close out the podcast?
Class is now dismissed.